You've arrived at episode 499. Menopause and HRT. Now, they're big topics to talk about these days, but this chat, it goes well beyond just talking about hot flushes. And if you're a woman, let's say from 40 to 70, then you need to hear this because we get into the stuff that nobody wants to say publicly. The menopause symptoms that are just utterly awful, like the depression, the rage, the lack of attraction to your partner, or your libido that just vanishes overnight. The reason divorce rates go up, along with domestic violence numbers, and even the suicide numbers go up too. And we unpack why mainstream medicine and big pharma still aren't taking menopause health seriously. And we talk about what that's costing us. This episode, honestly, it's bloody powerful. And honestly, blokes, men, fellas, if you're in a relationship with a woman or you're surrounded by women that are going through this midlife stage, you need to listen to this too, because understanding this might just save a relationship, a marriage, or even a life. Now, let's dive in. Even as a scientist and nutritionist, I was secretly trapped in binge eating and hooked on sugar. And let's be real, the so-called solutions can feel overwhelming. Calorie counting, restrictive diets, weight loss pills, surgery, and even injections. I'm Maddie Lansdowne, and the truth is, more nutrition facts aren't the answer. It's understanding why we eat the way we do. And you don't need to be perfect to achieve great health either. That shift changed everything for me, and now I share it here as the host of the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast, where it's my mission to help 1 million people break free from the yo-yo diet cycle for good by bringing you the conversations that really matter in nutrition, health, and psychology. And I'm not afraid to challenge mainstream health advice when it doesn't stack up. Are you ready? Let's begin. What's up, my healthy friends? So today we're talking about hormones, and I'm bringing to you one of the biggest names in the game. Today's conversation is with someone that I'm thrilled to have here. We've got Dr. Louise Newson, a GP from the UK. She's a hormone health pioneer and the founder of Newson Health. Louise disrupted healthcare by treating menopause not as a natural inevitability, but as a treatable hormone deficiency, which should be good news to a lot of people listening. And she fiercely challenged the guidelines around HRT diet dosing and empowered women to demand evidence-based care, which I think in all areas of health and wellness we should be demanding. So her work has sparked controversy in the media and deep debate, including recent media scrutiny, but she's remained steadfast using different legal channels and global education to be able to advance women's health. And needless to say, especially if you're a regular listener, you know that we love the rebels and the renegades, just like Louise. So welcome to the show, Louise. I'm happy you're here.
Oh, thank you. I've never really thought about me being a rebel, but I suppose when you word it like that, maybe I am.
Well, you're in good company. Yeah, I was my own background. I'm not sure if you know, but I used to work in cancer therapy and in that world, and through just a sheer lack of people looking at the cause of disease, it eventually led me to leaving and studying all sorts of different perspectives on health and wellness. But going back to that rebellion, what makes your stuff controversial?
Well, do you know what? It's not actually controversial. People think about it, and when somebody actually, if you months ago, called me controversial, I said, why don't you use the word thought leader instead? Because what I'm talking about is just basic science. And I'm also talking about things that we've known for decades. So it's just been ignored. There's a willful blindness. So I'm not talking about any new concepts. I haven't got a new invention. I haven't got a new treatment. I'm not doing anything way out there. But because in medicine, it's become very siloed. So you've got different people looking after different organ systems. And traditionally, menopause, perimenopause, hormone health has gone to gynecologists who are very good looking after our wombs and our ovaries, but they're not trained in the whole body in the same way that general physicians are. And then I've also got a pathology degree, so I'm very interested in basic science. So if I don't understand something in medicine, I go to the literature, I go to the evidence, I go to the textbooks, I look at how our body works, and then what goes wrong when it's not working. So I have quite a different brain to other people. But actually, I think that makes me clever rather than controversial. But it's just the way that I've been labelled, and, you know, media like a story. And actually, doctors like to take other doctors down, and that's what's happening a bit as well. But the people that are suffering most are women, and they've suffered for decades, centuries with their hormones. We understand them. We know what's going on, but women still can't access evidence-based treatment.
Yeah, it's wild to me with the medical, I guess the system, the irony that we call it a medical system, yet we look at organs individually. You know, it's a bit of a juxtaposition there, right? And it's wild to me that we get specialists that cost so much money to see, and they're only looking at one part of the body. And whether that's pharma-driven, education-driven, I don't know, but it seems so much more logical that this one body is like, contains it all.
It's interesting, you know, I actually wanted to do oncology, so cancer medicine, and I found it too narrow, actually, when I was doing an oncology job when as a junior doctor. I just thought, hang on, they're not looking at the whole patient. They're not looking at the family. They're not looking at what the patient wants. It was like, you have this protocol, this drug treatment, you know, this whatever, chemotherapy. And I just thought, it doesn't feel right for me. But when I was a junior doctor, I had great training by really big generalists. You know, we spent a lot of time in the ward round, and it wasn't so easy to access scans because this was in the early 1990s. So it was an art form watching these people both take a good history, but also examine patients. And, you know, that stayed with me all along. And then when I did my general practice, my family medicine training, the doctor who was training me said, you're going to be a really bad GP because you're going to be so much disease focused, you'll forget about the patient. So he spent a lot of time really about the art of consultation and the art of getting information out of patients in a very non-judgmental way. And I'm very grateful for him to do that. But I was explaining to my children recently, actually, how I used to love those ward rounds. I used to love learning from really learned senior consultants. But you're right, though, because now it's very much you have a cardiologist, you have a gastroenterologist, you have a, you know, it's very, very specialist. And years ago, I did an elective in Canada, so that was in 1992, and then they had a lot more specialists. It's a bit like our medicine system is now, but then I was really shocked because even on the ward round, if someone had a cough, get the respiratory doctor to come. And I'm like, hang on, you can treat a cough? Yeah. No, we can't because they need a scan and they need this and the other. And what about our insurance? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So people are being segmented. But the problem is with hormones, as you know, they go in every cell and every tissue and every organ. So they don't really belong in a specialty in the same way.
And by definition then would require a generalist to comprehend the full extent of their impact.
Yeah, totally. And that's been the problem for so long. And I'm also very interested in PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMS, premenstrual syndrome, postnatal depression, again, hormonal changes. But initially, they were labelled as psychiatric conditions. Mm-hmm. So the gynaecologists weren't interested. And, you know, this is a big problem as well, this mislabeling of women, actually.
You've touched on so many things, and I'm trying to decide which rabbit hole to go down. But I just want to take a step back to what you said in the beginning, which was that this isn't really new. And this is stuff that people have been working around and with for a long time. My question off the back of that is the amount of suffering that these women in this age bracket and in this life chapter are experiencing, is that level of discomfort and pain and suffering through the menopause years, is that new?
No, I don't think it is, actually. And it's a great question because people do talk about that, especially on social media. I was reading a book from the late 1800s by an amazing physician called Edward Tilt. We didn't know about hormones then. He didn't know, but he knew there was a change happening in women. And his book splits up, actually, all the different organ systems. So he talks about epilepsy. He talks about the nerve system. He talks about cardiology, the palpitations. But he also talks a lot about the mental health turmoil that are going on. And he calls it this crisis time before bleeding stopped in a woman. So he's actually describing perimenopause. He writes a lot about the asylums. He writes a lot about all the different treatments that they were trying to give to these poor women because they didn't know it was a hormonal imbalance. So it's just been labeled different. Obviously, in the early 1900s, there were lots of hysterical women. Now we have people with borderline personality disorders or different psychiatric conditions.
Yeah.
So it's not really, people are still suffering. I don't think the suffering is any worse or better. It's just labeled differently. And mm-hmm. then it's misunderstood, because if I came to you and I said, I'm perimenopausal and I'm really struggling with my mental health, you might go, oh, it's just transition, you'll get through it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I say, oh, I've got bipolar, you might go, oh gosh, are you on antipsychotics? Are you okay? Is the psychiatrist looking after you? But actually, it might just be that I've been mislabeled or misdiagnosed. So I think the suffering has been there for ages, but it's just not been diagnosed properly, but also not spoken about. Because a lot of symptoms related to our hormones are symptoms that you can't see externally. Mm-hmm. So then it's quite hard to describe to people, I've lost my identity, I don't know who I am, I wake up unhappy in the morning, you know, I'm dragging through treacle, I'm exhausted. And these are words I hear every day in my clinic, and I experience those symptoms myself. But it's quite hard to admit to people you're feeling like that, especially if you've always been, you know, a strong, independent person. Who are you going to really talk to? Do you go to your doctor to say you feel like this?
Mm.
And that's where, you know, my work as an educator is really important, because once women have the information, they can often work out what's going on. So then it's easier to go to your doctor to say, I think I'm perimenopausal, rather than I've got these really weird symptoms. And then people say, yeah, it's just because you're a bit stressed, Louise, you know, you're a bit tired. Maybe you should just do a bit of relaxation.
Well, I was just about to ask, like, does that mean there is or isn't any credence to the idea that menopause, the worst outcomes for menopause sufferers are contributed to by the chaos and the ongoing stress of the modern lifestyle? Or is that like, no, it doesn't hold water?
I don't know. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Go for it.
No, I think it's bullshit, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more gaslighting of women, because I've heard people, and I've heard quite learned doctors on different podcasts say, you know, if women really look after themselves, self-care is something that we get told to do a lot as women. Mm-hmm. So if we look after ourselves, if we reduce our stress, if we exercise and eat really well, then this menopause transition will be a lot better and smoother. It's because people are reading things and they're more scared and worried.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have met people, including myself, actually, are really fit and well, and then you just fall off a cliff with no reason whatsoever other than your hormones change. You know, most doctors will have spoken to women who've had a surgical menopause. They've been young, fit, well, they've had their ovaries removed. Suddenly, bang, that's it. So it's really unfair for women. Women have always been multitasking and juggling in different ways. Yes, there are more pressures on us because of, you know, children, job, whatever, modern life. But men have got pressures on them too with modern life. And I haven't heard ever anyone talk about self-care for men.
Mm.
And I feel very strongly, whether we do HRT or not, whether we eat the right food or not, we all have to look after our mental health and we have to be responsible. So, you know, I take all the hormones that I need, but I still do yoga regularly. I still meditate regularly. Otherwise, my brain would be a nightmare. I can't blame my hormones for that, you know.
But with the male comparison, I would also argue that the self-care for most men looks very different. And if we lean into the ideas around masculine feminine, is that, mm-hmm. you know, a man's more likely to build, conquer, destroy, fight as a sense of purpose. And that list of things is less likely to be the way that a woman derives her meaning. And so I would argue that, and men, sure, we need self-care. I just think it looks different.
Yeah, absolutely. But it shouldn't be as a treatment or a prevention for a hormonal change. You know, I can't think of anything else in medicine. You know, if I had, you know, you do lifestyle in parallel. So I often use the example of if I had raised blood pressure, which mm-hmm. is more likely as I age, it doesn't usually cause symptoms, but we treat it to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. But if I see someone with raised blood pressure, if they're otherwise fit and well, I will talk to them about having treatment. If I see someone who's overweight, who doesn't exercise, who smokes, who drinks, and they've got raised blood pressure, depending on the level, I will probably still give medical treatment, but I will talk to them a lot about their exercise, their nutrition, everything else as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's done in parallel. But somehow, and I see it and I hear it all the time, women who have hormonal changes, and when we're menopausal, we have an increased risk of heart disease, as you know,
mm-hmm.
we're told, oh, just have a cup of tea, just try and lose some weight, just exercise.
Yeah.
Without giving treatment. And the two can be done in parallel. But sometimes there's this conversation, you either take hormones or you exercise and look after yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to do the two anyway, really.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. You touched on something there, which I'm really curious about, especially since the world that I work in has a lot to do with metabolism and weight loss and that kind of thing, is that often a part of the initial signs in perimenopause for some women, or the ones that they either really wish to avoid or are really unhappy about, is that weight gain.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that occurs for a lot of them. And so, and sadly, due to life conditioning and marketing, I think a lot of women head into that phase thinking like, I'm just going to not eat, or I'm just going to go on a calorie deficit. Yeah. And I'm curious with your knowledge and experience about like what goes on there if women head into that space and then try to combat what's happening with another low calorie starvation style diet.
Absolutely. And too many people just not eating enough. You're absolutely right. But we have to think about menopause as a cardiometabolic problem. So if you think the hormones are metabolically active in our bodies, I've already said they affect every cell in our body, but they also affect other hormones, other systems, other organs, which release different hormones as well. So just thinking about insulin, insulin has a really important effect with our hormones. So if we have low estradiol, you have insulin resistance, you have changes in your insulin levels, you have big glucose spikes. So you have this metabolic syndrome going on, which predisposes people to type 2 diabetes. Hence, menopausal women have a higher incidence of type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So even if women, and I feel really bad because for many years as a doctor, I'd listen to patients, women would come in and say, doctor, I ate exactly the same, exercise the same, and look at me, I'm putting on weight. And I'll be just going, yeah, right, you're just lying a bit. You're not telling me the whole story.
Yeah.
And then you understand, and this is the thing, isn't it? Like I said, when you go back to the basics, when you hear the same things from patients, you've got to think, actually, I must be doing something wrong as a doctor. It doesn't fit into what they're saying. So there will be weight changes because the metabolism will change.
Mm-hmm.
But also because the hormones work, obviously, in our pancreas, they work in our liver, they also work in our brain. And our brain, as you know, determines our metabolism. It's got great pathways with our liver, but also with our gut microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
So our gut microbiome changes. If we don't have hormones, our gut microbiome changes. If we don't have hormones, the satiety centers in our brains are different. Also, just the metabolism pathways from our brain to our liver will alter as well. So there's lots of sort of metabolic shifts that are going on. But also, our bodies are designed to have estrogen. Estrogen, especially estradiol, the anti-inflammatory estrogen, is very important for the way our whole body and system works. Even at the cellular level, our macrophages, our inflammatory cells, our mitochondria, the powerhouse, need estrogen. So if we suddenly don't have it, our body is always trying to compensate. So it will produce some more stress hormones. It will maybe make a difference to our thyroid hormone, but it also will try and produce more estrogen. But it produces estrone, which is an inflammatory type of estrogen, quite weak on the receptors, but it's made from the adipocytes, the fat cells. And fat cells, as I'm sure you know, produce a whole cascade of cytokines, chemicals, that can be very toxic in the body. We used to think fat cells was just like a lump of yellow stuff that's a bit annoying, but actually it's metabolically very active. So you increase the number of your fat cells to get more estrogen, estrone, but you also get all this inflammation as well. And this weight gain is often in the midline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mortifying. I had it when I was perimenopausal, and I've always had quite a flat stomach. And I remember my mum saying, oh, you've put on a bit of weight. And I just wanted to lamp her because I knew I hadn't done anything different. But so it's very, very common. But also, most of us, when you've got a hormonal shift, you feel rubbish, right? You're not sleeping well. And we know poor sleep can increase weight. It's just fact. We often have muscle and joint pain, so exercising is quite difficult. You know, we feel quite sluggish. We just don't want to do it. We have less enjoyment when we exercise. So, you know, if we don't exercise, that's going to affect our metabolism. And then a lot of women will have had sugar cravings before they have their periods, as this drop of hormones, estrogen and progesterone, can trigger sugar cravings. So if you've got these yo-yo hormones in perimenopause or low hormones in menopause, a lot of people crave the wrong foods and then they can't be bothered to cook. And so you've got this whole, you know, and I'm not everyone does that, but lots of us do. So there's lots of reasons. And then you feel bad. And then you say, like I speak to women and they say, well, I hardly eat, doctor. And I say, what do you eat? Well, I'll have a cereal bar in the morning and then I'll have a low fat lasagna ready-made, something that I pop in the microwave at lunchtime. Then I might have a sandwich that's like a meal deal from Tesco's or something and a low-fat yogurt. I'm like, what? But what's happening to your gut microbiome?
And where's the protein?
Precisely. So yeah. But we've all been told that fat's bad for us and protein is, you know, everyone's confused about nutrition.
Yeah.
So, and you know what it's like, once you don't eat enough, your metabolism then changes and alters. And then, you know, so women are, you know, without this understanding what's going on, it can be very difficult. And sadly, a lot of doctors don't realize. And it often starts even younger when people have hormonal changes, like I say, with PMS, PMDD, but also people who are on contraceptives that blocks the natural hormones working. Yeah. So a lot of women I see have had the implant, they've been on contraception, they've put on weight. The moods change, they've been on antidepressants, and they're not thinking about the hormonal, the importance of hormones really to help with our metabolism and, you know, the shape and size of us as well. And also, you know, this testosterone is important for metabolism and it helps build muscle. So if you haven't, you know, got the same muscle, muscles are metabolically active as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all these processes that are so important. Well,
I think too, when it comes to testosterone, it's so easily just written off as a male hormone. Like it's just totally ignored. Well, not totally, but yeah, well, often people hear testosterone. Yeah, and they think men in the gym with huge muscles and definitely not women.
Yeah. No, and even for men it's hard. But you see, there's this big misunderstanding about testosterone being an anabolic steroid because as soon as, in fact, it's interesting because they were trying to make a synthetic progesterone because when they found the hormones, they wanted to commercialize them. This is in the 1940s and make money out of them. So they'd made a synthetic estrogen, but they were trying to make a synthetic progesterone. And by mistake, they made a synthetic testosterone. And when I say synthetic, it's been chemically altered. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same in the body. And then since then, they went down this pathway with the synthetic testosterones and made many, many different types. So they've all got different structures. So they work differently on the body, but they have different risks. So they can build muscle in really weird ways. Mm. You know, we've all seen people that have injected testosterone, their body shape goes weird.
Yeah.
But they also can increase risk of heart disease. They can cause infertility. They can cause other problems. But I don't prescribe any of that. I prescribe the natural testosterone. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to explain to someone the other day in my clinic, and she was getting very confused because she's very anxious. Her hormones are all over the place. And I said, look, if I gave you roast chicken, you'd know that that's got chicken in it. If I gave you chicken flavored crisps, it will have no chicken in it, but it will still be labeled as chicken. Mm-hmm. So the synthetic hormones are the crisp version, you know, whereas the hormones we prescribe are the roast chicken, you know, it's all the, you know, the sweets, the candies that are made of, you know, they're labeled strawberries. They've got no strawberries in them. They're just strawberry flavor.
Yeah.
And so even when I read articles where people say the risks of testosterone, yeah, sure, there are risks of the synthetic testosterone, but why the hell would you have those? You know, if you're going to just help replace a missing hormone, you want to replace it with what's missing, not something synthetic.
I've got a question, and I'm asking it mostly just to understand your answer, not because I'm necessarily attached to the question, but it is I'm trying to pick the right words. What do you see the fallout being from an era of women that have unnaturally altered their hormones to sustain a period of life which naturally should be over?
Yeah, that's such a great question. There is so much fallout. The WHI, the Women's Health Initiative study that came out in 2002, has been the biggest travesty for women's health in the history of mankind. I can't think of anything worse because the suicide rate has increased. Mm. Mental health has worsened. cardiovascular disease risk has increased. Dementia has become very high. Osteoporosis has increased. Cancer has increased. Diseases like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, motor neuron disease, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, inflammatory bowel disease, all of them have increased. Now, not all of this increase is due to low hormones, but a lot of it is, because we've known for decades that women who have low hormones have an increased risk of all these diseases. And like you say, we're living so much longer. So it wasn't an issue 100 or so years ago in the same way, because we didn't have this long health, you know, lifespan, whereas now we do. And women are often ending their lives with very poor health. They often have multiple diseases, and they often go to nursing homes, they go to care homes, they go to residential homes. You know, when I was a GP and I'd visit these places, they were mainly full of women, and they were all full of women who never took hormones, because I did an audit to see how many of them were taking hormones. None of them were. And, you know, none of us want to have diseases, and it's not just hormones that will help reduce the incidence of diseases. But I tell you what, the women who take hormones are healthier. We've known that for a long time. They have less risk of diseases. They have better day-to-day life, and they have a longer life expectancy as well. But it's just seen as a lifestyle drug that's a Caucasian drug to help hair and skin. It's just madness.
Because you're listening here, I can safely assume you're an absolute legend. And so if you want to keep this party going, I'd love to invite you over to follow me on Instagram or YouTube, both under the same name of The Real Weight Loss Coach. Over there, you'll find different content in both places. It's different. So heaps of bite-sized pieces of information. So if you want to learn lots of things really fast with a bit of a scroll, or simply you just prefer some visuals, then scroll over to The Real Weight Loss Coach on Instagram and YouTube. So see you there. Thank you. And let's get back into the episode. Does that mean once a woman is on HRT, it's just inevitable that she'll be on that for the rest of her life till the day she dies?
So it's choice. Anything we do is a choice. So, but the evidence is clear that if the benefits outweigh the risks, which they do for most women, when they take natural body identical hormones, then they can continue it forever. You know, it's like exercising. You know, we can choose to exercise regularly or not. But if we carry on exercising regularly, we're going to be healthier. And it's the same with taking hormones. There's no reason to stop. People in the past were worried about the breast cancer risk, but that's with synthetic hormones. So yeah. I wouldn't really, you know, whenever I see anyone who's on synthetic hormones, unless there's good reason, I'll always try and convert them into natural hormones.
Yeah, that's like the, so we've got a 4.5 month old baby here. So we've just been through that stage of life. But one thing that I uncovered during the pregnancy was, just as you described, the fear of vitamin A in pregnancy. If you look into the data, 100% synthetic forms from supplement companies, and you can eat as much liver as you like and you'll be fine. Like it's almost impossible to overdose on the natural compound compared to the risks of the synthetic
stuff.
It's
very different. Very, very different. And I think the whole processing of food, you know, I always used to cook, I still do, food from scratch. But when the children were little and I was really busy, my mum would go, why don't you just make, you know, buy a tomato sauce? Why don't you just buy a jar of chicken casserole? And I'm like, mum, like, it's got a shelf life of about 5 years. Like, it's got to have something in it that's not right, you know? And I would just cook for the freezer the whole time. So it's quite easy, especially when they're young, because they don't eat very much. But I knew, you know then instinctively it's very different.
Yeah.
But it's labelled the same. So you think, you know, you can see what people do it, especially when it's all looks very pretty and convenient on the shelves.
Yeah, totally. Marketing, marketing. I guess over in the UK you've got Chris Van Tulliken, is it?
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's doing some fantastic work in regards to bringing attention to the system is the big part of the problem, you know?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And I do think hormones and food are very similar. You know, if I wasn't doing hormone work, I would do food, because it's so important, obviously. And he's just highlighting fact. But, you know, there is, you know, there's big money to be made in processed foods. There's big money to be made in synthetic drugs as well, and synthetic hormones. So but I'm not fighting the establishment. I'm just allowing women to know the difference, and then it's up to them what they do.
Yeah, totally. And I think empowering people, because I'm all on board with what Chris is doing. but my thoughts are, in the absence of my billions of dollars to fight said system, I need to empower the individual. And I think the work that we can do here on the podcast is point people in the right direction, because inevitably governments, policymakers, they move to where the money is, right? And so if we can get people to spend their money in the right places, on the right foods, on the right doctors, on the right services, then things will begin to shift.
Yeah, and I think a lot about this, because I have a lot of women, you know, and men reaching out to me, say, how can we make difference? How can we change policies? How can we change guidelines? And it's like, well, you can't. Have you seen who's written the guidelines? Have you seen their conflicts? Have you seen who they're paid by? Have you seen these, you know, various groups of people who are paid by pharma? So, but actually, women who recognize me and stop me in the street, they thank me often for saving their lives, because they've listened to a podcast, they've, you know, they've downloaded Balance app, and they've made the decisions, or their family have, for them. And that's the most important thing that we can do, really, is just for people to choose.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And it's great that we've got the ability to put this in front of people, you know. You've mentioned a few times, like the sort of PMDD, the depression, the mental health stuff, the perimenopausal or menopausal rage that women experience. Can we talk about that for a little bit? Because I feel like that's something that aside from doctor or, you know, coach, client, consultant, and that relationship, outside of that, it's very shameful for a lot of women and embarrassing to admit that they feel like their mind is falling apart. So I want to bring airtime to that conversation.
Yeah, and it's so important. You know, I'm often really tired, and I'm like, think, oh, I'm just going to pack all this in and stay at home and make cakes. But it's the mental health. It's true. It's the mental health component that keeps me going and makes me get up in the morning, because these hormones are made in our brains. Of course, they're made in our ovaries, but they're actually made and manufactured in our brains. Every cell in our brain responds to estradiol, progesterone, and testosterone. And we have lots of neurotransmitters, chemical messengers in our brain. So we've all heard of serotonin, dopamine, you know, melatonin for sleep. But these other hormones, estradiol, progesterone, testosterone, affect the levels of those hormones. Mm-hmm. But they also affect the way that our cells in our brain grow, the way that our nerves communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. They affect the blood supply to the brain. They reduce inflammation in the brain. And I'm telling you all this because hopefully you're thinking, okay, so if I don't have those hormones, the brain is going to be affected. Like, again, it's not rocket science, it's just basic physiology. So the commonest symptoms, and we've just been looking at symptoms from, you know, 400,000 women who monitor their symptoms on Balance app. And the commonest symptoms are anxiety, low mood, irritability, poor sleep, fatigue, this feeling of self-doubt, low self-worth. You know, the symptoms, like I said earlier, that you can't see, but they're real and they're scary. We know that suicide rate increases. And I have lost count the number of women I've seen from psychiatric hospitals who have been sectioned in the past, who have had very dark, intrusive thoughts, and they've been given antidepressants, antipsychotics, lithium, electroconvulsive therapy, more recently ketamine infusions.
Yeah, wow.
No one ever has either asked about their periods or thought about hormones. Yet these women are clearly either menopausal, perimenopausal, or have BMDD. And these women also improve with hormones, especially a combination of all three hormones. And I've seen it so often in the last 10 years or so that it's not just a coincidence. It's real. But women are being misdiagnosed, they're being mistreated. And the drugs that they're given have side effects and risks far beyond any type of hormone treatment. Mm. So until others recognize it, or other people recognize it for those individuals, the suffering is palpable. And you only need to visit a psychiatric hospital and see the number of women who are suffering. You know, but also with PMDD, often there's a big change in hormone levels before periods. And the mental health symptoms are often very severe. And people can get very angry, very irritable, and they can sometimes act on the way they're feeling, either by self-harming or by harming other people. And last year I visited some prisons, and there are quite a few women I spoke to who had actually done crime before their periods. The period came and they regretted it every day, but they're locked up in prison for life.
Wow.
Because they were in the wrong place in the wrong time with a knife in their hand. But, you know, I only had symptoms for a few months, but there are times that, you know, my husband's breathing. I could have just lamped him. He was just that noise.
Well, divorce numbers go up. Like,
they do go up, and it's real. And I wrote about it in my last book. Actually, there was a time in London where I was in front of my three children, and I just didn't care. They could all just leave. Like, I was just like, just go. I don't need you. I don't want you. I just like, and but your brain is just taken over by a demon, and it's really hard to describe because I'm a bit feisty, but I'm not a shouty, slam door type of person.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really like, oh God, everything in life is really annoying me. And I've spoken to women, and they said, you know, if I had a knife in my hand, I would have killed at the time, and I've thrown plates across and casseroles at children and all sorts. And then the next day, my period comes, and we laugh, and we know it's not going to happen for another few weeks. But that's not funny.
No,
that shouldn't be happening. So, you know, and it is. It sounds, you know, I can go to my doctor with a rash and say, look, this is really sore. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
I can't go to my doctor and say, do you know what? I think I'm going to kill my husband because his breathing is really annoying me and the way he chews his food. You know, like you can't do it, but it's happening all the time because I hear it. You know, I'm lucky being a doctor because I can ask anything. People will tell me things that they've never spoken about before. But domestic abuse goes up during perimenopause and menopause. Women are very vulnerable. They can't talk about it. They blame themselves. You know, addictions go up. People are drinking more. They're going to drugs because they can't get medical treatment to rebalance their hormones. So it's a real, but the mental health, you're absolutely right, is a real concern.
Yeah, absolutely. I predominantly work with women, and I have a lot of conversations in regards to the relationship breakdown or miscommunication or no longer feeling connected. Mm. Through that stage of life, and it's really sad because equally on the other side, I mean, historically, men aren't great with emotional chats with women anyway.
Yeah.
But then on top of it, to try and comprehend what she's going through and how out of body that experience feels, it's so destabilizing for a relationship.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I'm very fortunate. I've been with my husband since I was 18, so we're pretty stable as a couple. Yeah, well, we met in Freshers Week at medical school, but so we are stable. But you know, there were times where he was like, oh, "If this is what it's going to be like, I'm done." You know, and even if the times when I was like, "Just go," actually, he's my real rock. I couldn't manage without him. But in that split second, it could. But we're very open as a couple. But the number of people who don't talk at all about how they feel, or they don't talk about how sex is so painful, how they haven't got a libido for anybody, not just their partner, they can't talk about it. And that's what I think is really sad. So then the partners internalize and think, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I've changed. You know, and then there are maybe people who are in a same-sex relationship. You've got two hormonal women and they don't understand each other. So it's really difficult unless people understand before it happens, really, about it. But then it shouldn't just be, and I see it a lot, people go for marriage counselling or they go and see other doctors and they're like, well, let's just talk about it. Let's just talk about how you can adjust and da-da-da-da. Actually, let's talk about it being a medical problem, a hormone deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Let's rebalance your hormones. Let's work on your relationship as well. But don't just expect it to get better if you don't replace those hormones.
Well, and the other thing is, as you well know, is that having practical, logical conversations about emotional experiences, people rarely see eye to eye. And you can go to therapists and doctors where they give you a very logical prescription as to what you should do to fix that.
Mm.
But when you're in your emotions and in what later might seem like the irrationality of it all, logic is rarely the answer to emotional challenges.
Yeah, for sure. It can be very, very difficult for people to unpick, really. And, you know, like you say, the relationships that break down, but the mental health, you know, it's easier also for women to be prescribed an antidepressant than it is a natural hormone. And that's wrong. You know, a lot of women I speak to say, I know I'm not depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel flat. I feel joyless. My zest for life has gone, but antidepressants just numb my symptoms. I don't even feel joy at all. Yeah. And I don't feel sadness. So that seems wrong as well. There's one thing, not giving any treatment at all, but what's happening is people are being medicalized with inappropriate treatment.
I'm curious, and this might lean into the idea of the natural hormone. Is the reason that this isn't yet really being given enough airtime by big pharma, by governments, and made a real national or international health focus or crisis, whatever we term it as, but is that because we've got situations where big pharma is unable to patent some of these molecules,
so
they're not giving attention to it?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I don't do any work with pharmaceutical companies, just for complete transparency. So
yeah, neither. I left that industry.
Yeah, so and I don't work with any brands either. But HRT is just three letters, or MHT, some countries call it. Mm-hmm. But there are different types, obviously. So the natural body identical hormone is generic. Mm-hmm. So we know the structure. Anybody could make it if they want to, but you can't label it as a new drug. Mm-hmm. Whereas when new drugs come out, they have a patent, like you say. And so it's usually for several years, and that's when they make most of their money, because it costs around $1 billion to get a new drug to market. Mm-hmm. So they have to make that money back and make a profit, of course, as well. So in that time where it's still got a patent, so it's the only company that can make that drug and manufacture it and market it and prescribe it, that's when big money is made. Now, that's, you know, new contraceptives are coming out all the time, and they're just different chemical structures. We can't do that with natural hormones. So they are cheap, and they're always going to be cheap. So the only way, I guess, pharma make money is by volume. But there isn't huge volume, because only about 5% of menopausal women globally are prescribed hormones. So, you know, there's new antidepressants, there's new antipsychotics, there's new painkillers. And there's a big push every time something new comes out. And now there's two new non-hormonal treatments for hot flushes. And they are still on a patent. So all menopause societies and a lot of menopause doctors are paid by the drug companies that make these non-hormonal drugs. And you can see the conversation happening more and more in your country as well as mine about HRT is dangerous and menopause is just hot flushes. Oh, we've got this new treatment for hot flushes. Why don't you try this?
Yeah.
So, you know, so you can see it happening. But at the end of the day, I want my roast chicken. I don't want chicken crisps. And I want to have the best that's right for me as an individual, as a menopausal woman.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's part of what I do, but distributing that message that the chicken is better for you, no matter what the marketing on the chip bag says or the crisp bag says.
Yeah.
The chicken is better for you, the real stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's always going to be a problem with hormones. But it's not, I don't really care about whether pharma make money or not, because it's about the person. You know, I went into medicine to help my patients.
Yeah. So, I guess one question that's sort of been playing around in the back of my mind as well is, what commonalities do the women that don't have a horrific experience, like what's common in their journeys that, or are they just lucky? It's luck of the draw, their hormones are balanced.
So I think there's some women, and a lot of women, who their brain really does become very sensitive to hormonal changes. Mm-hmm. So, but some women are fine. Like, some women don't have any mental health changes at all, or they think they don't, but mm-hmm. it's really difficult to know sometimes. Sometimes people just put down their symptoms to just natural aging, whatever natural aging might be. And they'll say, well, I haven't got symptoms. And then you say, well, do you get any muscle or joint pains? Oh, yeah, I'm really stiff in the morning. Have you got any urinary symptoms? Oh, yeah, I get up at night a few times to have a wee, and I cough or sneeze, there's a little dribble, but that's just part of being older.
Yeah.
You know, and so so they often, if you ask them, do you have menopausal symptoms, they'll say no. But if you ask them specifically, and then if they have hormones, they'll often go, wow, I feel better. My joint pain's improved. I've got more energy. I don't have any urinary tract infections. My palpitations have gone. My dry skin's better. So they might not have the symptoms that, you know, the classic symptoms, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, the thing is also about giving hormones is not just for symptom control, it's for future health. So if I go back to my blood pressure analogy, Most people with raised blood pressure, hypertension, don't have symptoms, but we know the risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke increases with untreated blood pressure. So we give treatment. So if I had a woman with no symptoms at all, she's got a 1 in 2 chance of osteoporosis. She's got a high risk of cardiovascular disease, number one killer in women. So I can give her HRT, which we know halves the risk of cardiovascular disease. We know it pretty much prevents osteoporosis. So even if I was just doing it to prevent or reduce the incidence of those two conditions, let alone all the others I mentioned earlier, then actually that's not a bad thing as well. And so we've got to remember HRT is licensed as a preventative treatment for osteoporosis, yet most doctors don't give it for that reason.
Yeah.
But osteoporosis affects around 1 in 2 postmenopausal women. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas we, you know, we give a statin or a blood pressure lowering treatment, cardiovascular incidence is not 1 in 2 women. It's high, but it's not that high. So then we need to be thinking about, well, why are we giving the hormones? What are the risks of not having hormones? And there will always be some women, and they're often women who, if they exercise, your muscles will produce hormones. So they might be producing more internally, more endogenous hormones. And they'll say, look, I'm fine. Like I run, I swim, I exercise, I eat healthily, never had a symptom at all. I don't want hormones. That's fine. They've still got an increased risk of these conditions, but they're probably their risk is smaller than others.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's always people that put on my social media, yeah, I know, but my mother's 85 and she's been fine. She's never had hormones. Yeah, that's fine. People who don't exercise can still get away with being fine. I've met loads of obese people that never have heart attacks. So we know that if you're overweight, you're more likely to have a heart attack. We know if you smoke, yeah, you're more likely to have lung cancer, but not everyone who smokes gets lung cancer. It's just all about risk. And that's where it's about an individual choice. You know what I mean? I might decide to smoke 20 a day because I like it. I don't, by the way. But I might decide that's the risk I want to take because, you know, my chances of having lung cancer are there, but it's not that high. And, you know, so, and I think this is where it's not for me as a doctor to say you must or you mustn't. It's about, you know, these are the choices.
These are the options and you get to decide.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, the other thing with hormones is that, you know, if people don't like them, they stop them. I don't use implants. I don't inject the hormones. I don't pin people down and go to their houses and give them hormones. So, you know, if I took my patch off today, it would be out of my body tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it doesn't build up. Like, it's harder to come off antidepressants than it is to come off HRT.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I always say to women, I have no idea how many of your symptoms are due to your hormones or life in general, but I do know you've got an increased risk of diseases and I do know HRT is safe. So we can try it and then we'll get the dose right for you. Wait for a few months to see the effect and then you choose. If you want more, yes. If you don't, you've tried it. You know how you are now, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think the work that you're doing is incredible. And just want to do a quick shout out to one of my clients, Jackie. So Jackie was the one that said, you've got to get Louise on the show. And she's in the UK. And over the years, I've had many UK clients and they're always amazing.
Nice.
So I'm so glad that we got you here and we can share your message with all of our people in Australia, US, everywhere that listens.
Nice.
And I love, I'm just going to be a supporter of your work. And whenever you want to come back, feel free to message me.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
But for everyone listening, where can they find your work online? Where are we sending them?
So the easiest place is my website, which is Dr. Louise Newson, drlouisenewson.co.uk. And there's information about my weekly podcast, my free balance app. There's lots of resources there as well. My YouTube that I do. So that's just the easiest place just to go there.
Fantastic. And now for us to wrap up, we've got our little real talk round. So I've got a few questions, sort of rapid fire is the idea. And I'm not going to answer any of the questions. It's just for you to let us know what you think and then we'll wrap up. Is that all good?
Perfect.
All right. Question one. What's something that you believe now that made you laugh 10 years ago?
Oh, gosh, that's interesting, isn't it? I used to believe that women who had urine infections were just a nuisance because they'd always turn up in the practice on the Monday morning with their urine pot. And I never once thought about hormones. So it's laughable how ignorant I was.
What's one habit you'd be embarrassed to admit that you still have?
Oh my God. Probably just, I'm so routiney. So it's just embarrassing that I don't have lions. I get up the same time every day. And it's just a habit now. My husband hates it when I'm, bing, right, 6 o'clock, let's get up. So, yeah, that's a bit annoying.
What's one supplement, habit, or wellness trend that you think is totally overhyped?
Probably collagen supplements.
I agree with you on that. What's one rabbit hole topic that you think more people should explore?
Oh, testosterone for women.
I sensed that it was going to be in that wheelhouse.
Did you?
In 20 years from right now, what do you want to be known for?
I want to be known by someone who just empowers women with knowledge that's right for them, so they make the choices that are right for them.
And if everything you said was deleted, what's one sentence that you want to leave people with today?
Look after yourself, get the knowledge that you need.
Fantastic. Well, Louise, thank you so much for being here. It's been awesome.
And well, it's been great. Thank
I can't
you.
Wait to share it with everybody. So thank you.
Oh, thanks ever so much for having me on.
No worries. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learned anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.